Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 462, the Netflix spectacular Triple Frontier.
Yeah.
So before we dig in too much, we have guests, so we don't want to make them sit there forever waiting for us to talk, so or waiting so he can talk. So we'll go around the table and introduce ourselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us today is Matt Neglia from the Next Best Picture podcast. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing really well today. How are you?
Good.
We're good. I think you're doing better than us, though. Sounds like you had a fun night.
Oh, man. We decided to celebrate St. Paddy's Day a day early, and it was a 24/7 rager.
Well, I'm
just no other way to put it. We started watching The Departed at 9 a.m. drinking Guinness, and all went from there.
Well, sounds like you had a fun time, and I'm glad that you're here with us. I mean, I knew that you would be alive, but I'm glad you're doing the show. We appreciate it.
Surely.
Matt, why don't you tell the folks a little bit about your podcast? Matt is a really good friend of mine that online we talk about movies, and he does so much great work, especially around this last Oscar season. Matt, I don't know if you have just been sleeping for like a month straight to make up for all the sleep you lost, but your work was terrific this past season.
Thank you. No, I don't sleep. I've been told that I'm like part cyborg and that I never stop. And that's part of the thing is that over at nextbestpicture.com, we're always looking for what's going to be the Next Best Picture Oscar winner. And for all we know, that film could present itself in January at Sundance. It could present itself in February, like Get Out and Black Panther have done, and so on and so forth. So for us, the Oscar season never ends. And we're always constantly working to analyze what films are coming out that might have award season potential.
Well, they do incredible work over there. So if you have not followed them yet on social media, so Matt is at Next Best Picture, and then also nextbestpicture.com. Keep that bookmark, check it. He's always adding new stuff, and he's got a great team over there too. It's not just Matt by himself. So again, thanks for joining us. We appreciate this.
I feel like this dude is more legit than we are.
I know. I don't feel like we should be on this show.
Yeah, anymore. I feel like we should. Tom and I are just going to leave. We're going to go ahead and cut out.
We're going to make sure Kevin does the synopsis and you guys will be good to go.
We'll just let Matt talk.
Are we the guests?
Yeah, we're the guests. So I guess quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. We greatly appreciate it, which is why we beg for it every week. And of course, you can find us on the internet at facebook.com/realspoilers, Twitter @realspoilers, or our Patreon account, patreon.com/realspoilers, where $5 a month, you get extra content, and maybe you even get to be a guest. Not you, Matt. You don't have to give us $5.
Well,
I mean, we'll take your $5.
Yeah,
we're not proud.
Let's not go crazy.
But you don't gotta. So there, we've done all that. I guess we will now dig into Treasure of the Sierra. Triple Frontier.
Thank you for calling that out, because that's exactly what I thought. It's interesting. Like, this is definitely, it's a nerd culture movie without being a nerd culture movie, right? So you've got Batman. You've got Poe Dameron.
You've got the guys who have played characters.
That's
in
true.
But like, I know people seem to really be liking this movie.
I dug it.
And I wanted to punch it in the goddamn face.
Nice.
I like did. Like,
really? Like, I enjoyed it.
It was a little too bro-y for me.
It was so bro-y that it was like I thought one of the characters was going to die from toxic masculinity.
Oh, boy.
Like, I just couldn't stand
it. There were moments that I really enjoyed. Like, the whole opening sequence I thought was fantastic.
This movie, to me, is what tough guys who aren't really tough think tough guys are like.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like a Lone Survivor light or something. Like, the genre was the Lone Survivor type of
absolutely
movie.
I thought they were kind of going for Sicario with Lone Survivor.
I can see that, too.
Yeah.
Matt, will this be one of the next best pictures, or what were your thoughts on this?
Oh, God, no. This is interesting for me because, on one hand, J.C. Chandor, his previous three films... that would be Margin Call, All Is Lost, and A Most Violent Year, are all really stellar movies.
Yeah, and they're great-looking movies, and this movie looked good.
Also, Catherine Bigelow's involved.
It's co-written by Mark Bull, who is her go-to screenwriter. So, it's interesting, because like this is like the first movie that J.C. Chandor has directed that I feel like he didn't actually care about it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
He got that Netflix paycheck.
I think that's
what
happens.
I mean. Like, right? It just feels like if it was a Netflix cash grab, kind of a... They wanted to create a sophisticated action blockbuster.
That's what it seems like it was coming across.
And they wanted his name attached to it.
So, Matt, do you know, because I don't know the background of the movie, was it made for Netflix or was it made and then purchased by Netflix?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. I know that the production for this goes back to the beginning of the decade. I think that they acquired the rights to it, so I'm pretty sure it was made... What production company? Atlas Entertainment.
Okay.
Was a production company. And I think Netflix did pick it up.
I really feel like when you're an indie director like that, sometimes you reach this point where like your first movie's a passion project and you got two or three passion projects in you. And then after that, you're kind of like, well, now what?
David Ayers.
Yeah. And I kind of felt like that's what this was.
Yeah.
That it was like, well, I guess I'll make something of a more mainstream movie.
It's tough because I did get a lot of Sicario feels from this, right?
Absolutely.
And that, to me...
Especially the first 20, 30 minutes.
Absolutely. To me, that is a sophisticated action movie.
Right.
Well, and I agree, because it's not the close-ups, it's not the quick cuts, and that's because, I mean, this guy makes some good-looking films.
Yeah.
And I was looking up, you know, who's the cinematographer on this, Matt? His name escaped me.
Roman Vasanov, I think, or something along those lines.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the name, but he has done a lot of good-looking films.
Not Roman Reigns?
Fury. Comes to mind.
Yeah, he's done. Oh. But he did End of Watch, which I know is one of
those. Oh, so they're David Ayers movies.
This guy's his cinematographer. And so the beginning sequence you guys are talking about, that's the handheld camera, ground level stuff that you see in End of Watch and that sort of thing. And I really liked it. I mean, for better or for worse, he did the cinematography on Suicide Squad. Bad movie, but there were some good looking shots in it.
Was there?
Yeah, I mean,
you mean the Cara Delevingne dancing scene? Yeah. That's what you're a fan of?
I mean, this guy...
Win an Oscar? What an Oscar costume design.
Oh,
it was a costume design. I thought it was something more.
Marvel's just like, come on.
Yeah. But this guy can make some good-looking movies, and I hadn't realized that you know, his last movie was going all the way back to 2014, but that was A Most Violent Year, right? With Oscar Isaac?
Yeah.
I really liked that movie. Where did you land on that, Matt?
I liked it. I didn't love it enthusiastically. Yeah. I've only seen it once, and it is the kind of film that I want to give a second rewatch to, so that this way I can analyze if I liked it more or less or about the same. But for me, that's a really solid 7 out of 10, borderline 8 out of 10 movie for me.
Yeah.
I liked how that movie kind of like captured the period and the feel of it, but I also felt like it needed a little bit more going on. Like I felt,
I loved that Oscar Isaac brought back 1970s Al Pacino to the screen. Yeah, that was like
totally
my favorite aspect of the movie.
Yeah, like, and I wish it just had a little bit more of a little bit more going on, like one of those movies would have. I just rewatched Dog Day Afternoon the other day.
Good.
It was on sale on Vudu for like $5, and I'm like, hell yeah.
All day.
And
that's one of my favorites.
Oh my God, such a great movie.
So this movie, let's talk about the guys on the cover.
Yeah, so we've
Ben
got
Affleck,
Batman,
Charlie Hunnam,
the guy from
Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
But he's also Pacific Rim, if you want to go like big,
I guess,
bombastic.
That's true. Okay. Almost Christian Grey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, he was, yeah.
Garrett Hedlund, Tron.
James Hook, yeah, of course.
Pedro Pascal.
The guy that gets his eyeballs poked out by the mountain.
Yeah, and then, am I forgetting one?
Oscar Isaac.
And Oscar Isaac, of course, Poe Dameron.
And I got to tell you, they need to stop making Charlie Hunnam do an American accent.
Oh,
that needs to stop immediately.
Yes. Those little the speaking engagements that
good
he did,
Lord.
And how at the end of each one his accent would come, like every line, his accent would just bleed right
it's
through.
It's so funny because he is so, if you've ever seen Undeclared, which was like the series that Judd Apatow did after
Freaks and Geeks.
Freaks and Geeks. It's kind of the same class.
It's basically like those kids went to college.
Yeah,
I mean, it takes place in the present day, but it has a very, and it's a great show.
And he's
too.
On that show.
Yeah.
And they don't let him do an act. They don't want to. They just let him be who he is. And he's amazing. He's very funny.
His best performance is Lost City of Z. And he was using his regular accent. You know?
His American accent is atrocious.
Some actors can do it. There are those actors out there where, okay, for instance, I didn't grow up with Fry and Laurie. I'm sure Tom did. But when I watched House and then found out that Hugh Laurie was British, his accent worked for me completely. And there's a lot of actors.
Mel Gibson,
yeah,
who is
great one.
Actually American, but
he had an Australian accent.
But he was raised in Australia. It's funny because people think he's Australian, which because of the accent,
right.
But he's technically not.
So there's people that can do it, and then there's Charlie Hunnam. And it's unfortunate because you get some good actors like your boy Superman, Henry Cavill,
does a very convincing American accent.
And then there's some people that just can't do it. So I agree. Sometimes it's like, go with your...
Simon Pegg has a great American accent if you've never heard him do it.
Was it in that...
It was the David Schwimmer one. He did two movies with David Schwimmer.
It was like a murder kind of like...
And he has an American
accent. Murder Most
Foul? No, it was kind of like a...
It was post-Sean, but it was pre-Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, it was trying to be like one of those like crazy Pulp Fiction kind of movies.
But he does an American accent. It's like, okay, I can... It's convincing. Also, shout out to Garrett Hedlund, who isn't awful. He was really good in this.
You know, I have to say, after Mudbound especially.
Mm-hmm. That's what people were, yeah.
I saw him in a film at Sundance called Burden, which has not seen the light of day, unfortunately, and it probably never will.
Oh.
I think that's like his best performance of his whole career. Garrett Hedlund has done a complete 180 on me, because I used to look at him like, I don't get it. I just don't understand. Like, why does everyone like this guy so much? And he has really tapped into that rugged masculinity, but showing signs of vulnerability so freaking well that it's fantastic.
Yeah. The scene we'll get to in this movie where he's very convincing when we get to that certain scene.
He might be my favorite, actually.
I could see that.
He's really good in this movie, and I agree, because I used to put Garrett Hedlund in the Joel Kinnaman. I used to think of him as like a Joel Kinnaman.
I gotta tell you,
type.
So I did not know that Charlie Hunnam was in this movie.
Yeah.
And in the opening scene when Charlie Hunnam is giving his spiel to the military dudes, I thought it was Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah, so Joel Kinnaman would be perfect as one of these guys. You know what I mean?
Joel Kinnaman would fit in.
Yeah, he would fit in here, and it's like,
Matt, you're not wrong.
Yeah, so that's how I used to think of Hedlund, but it's like, no, he has grown, so I agree.
The problem is the last time I saw him was that awful Peter Pan movie.
Oh, was he in that?
He's Hook.
I remember Hugh Jackman was Hook.
Hugh Jackman is Blackbeard.
Oh.
Garrett Hedlund is James
Hook. He's the young Hook.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I totally forgot. I blocked
that. Doing that weird Johnny Depp cadence.
Well, Hugh Jackman wasn't much better, and I love Hugh Jackman.
I hearing from you that you have not seen Mudbound?
No, I have not.
Oh, dude, that's on Netflix. That should be your next thing that you should watch now.
That's a Netflix movie, right?
Wrestling's on and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, these guys are Oscar Isaac. Basically, he's a hired.
So they are all this whole cast were former military, I guess, Army Rangers or some secret unit, and they work together. And they've all retired basically. Oscar Isaac.
To me, here's the real tell when a movie isn't really working as a movie. Give me one character's name.
Tom. Ben Affleck was Tom.
Was it?
Yep.
I should know that because my name's Tom. And I
remember that Oscar Isaac is called Pope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I kept thinking they were saying Poe.
Yeah.
But that's the only... But it's
I agree. It's the story itself is meaningless.
You're supposed to feel sorry for the Ben Affleck character, especially, and we'll get there. But and him and his family, he's going through a divorce and he's struggling and everything.
I didn't get any of that.
I got none of it.
I was like, this guy's a dick. And when he got shot in the head, I was like, right on.
I didn't think he was a dick, but I definitely there was a.
Well, you're wrong.
But he wasn't a dick until we get to the house.
Right.
Like, then he becomes a dick.
And when he got shot in the head, I was like, good. Like, he's the guy that deserves to die. He's caused every single
he has
goddamn problem in this movie.
He's the reason they're in the mess that they're in.
He deserves it. Like, you
he got greedy.
You could have got out. He went Daffy Duck on him. He's like, mine, all mine. He's jumping up and down on the diamond.
That's right.
And it's like,
mine. No.
They could have got out of there with half of that money, which would have been
more money than they had to begin with,
way more than they ended up with.
1000% more, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, but he just, and so it's like, and that can be an interesting character study, but like, but if this movie's supposed to revolve around me liking that dude,
yeah, for me, that's where this. So I was into this movie until we get to the heist,
the house,
yeah,
and how he starts.
And I was done.
See,
I checked out of
the point. I wasn't into this movie until we got to the heist.
Interesting.
I was bored.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the heist aspect, because one thing that kept on going through my mind while watching this the entire time was, I feel like this is toxic bro culture's answer to Widows last year.
Yeah, I mean,
good call.
That's a great comparison.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking to myself, like, why is this not working? Why is it not working? And it's just not dynamic.
And there's,
it's very surface level, and it doesn't, in my opinion, go to any levels deeper in terms of characterization, in terms of breaking down, like I said, that macho-ness that these characters are exuding, that the action is exuding, like really showing some more of those layers of vulnerability and really getting us to care about them as people. Yeah. And I felt like a movie like Widows had great empathy for its characters and had a grander message of both the micro and macro look at what this heist meant, not just to the people involved, but to the community as well. And I just, you know, this movie does not have that.
You cared about them.
There
and
was
Widows.
Not one character in this movie that I liked.
What about the Garrett Hedlund character? No?
No.
I
did the best performance, but I don't know if I cared.
Yeah.
But not like the Widows characters. For each of the Widows, you saw what they were going through in their personal life, and you felt for each one of them and wanted them to succeed and get out of their trouble and everything. And this movie, you're like,
they doubled down on Affleck.
Well,
like, that's the only character they give, like, a serious... We know that Poe Dameron, or Oscar Isaac, had...
Who's that?
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. He said that he had a neck surgery. He said that he's had knee surgeries, and that's made everything has kind of fallen apart. But they don't really go into anything more than that.
No, he's just greedy.
Well, I don't think he is. I think he is like, I want to get out. I'm ready
and
to be
he
done.
He doesn't know how to function in the real world.
None of them do. Well,
Ben Affleck's character.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you see him trying to sell that condo.
Which I thought was hilarious.
Well, I also was like, has anybody in this ever bought a house? Like, the real estate agent doesn't just show you one house.
And why did he pick up the sign?
He's like, well, I guess nobody's going to buy it.
I guess I'll just take the sign.
I'm like,
me.
I don't think.
I will say this. He's the kind of character that would definitely get busted in a college admissions scam.
I think he's more like the kind of character that would get busted, like, nailing a co-ed.
It's just so funny when I saw like that meme before I watched the film, but I saw that meme was making its way around the internet.
Yeah, that line. I took a note of that line.
Yeah, it just made me laugh so much. I was like, wow, Triple Frontiers. How timely this movie be?
Seriously,
what
absolutely.
What was the line?
So when they're in the house and they're busting down all the walls and getting the money out, they talk about to Affleck's kids. They say, hey, your kids don't have to worry about getting into college. You can just buy their way in. Like,
that's
what?
So
that's funny.
What are the chances? Like,
Netflix playing the whole thing.
Oh,
it's cross-promoting with Fuller House.
That's right.
So really quick, just to get into this story. So Oscar Isaac's still the only one that's like still doing contract mercenary type work or whatnot. He gets a lead on all this money that a drug lord has. He has an informant, and so he needs his team to get together. He lies to them. He tells them that they're working for the government and they will get 25% of whatever they recover.
Right.
But later on, they find out after doing their recon he just is going in by himself and he wants all the money.
Right.
So that's kind of where we end up. And so I wanted to ask the question. I thought maybe the interesting question about this that could apply to lots of heist movies, but in this one in particular, who are the good guys? As in, so they try to wrap a script like this, as they do in most heist movies, around, well, your good guys are doing bad illegal things, but they're stealing from drug lords, so it's okay. I mean, where do the...
I feel like...
And they're killing, we're killing people. They're still doing illegal things, but...
As a comic nerd, I have read so many... I know, right? So many, like, vigilante heroes, right?
Yeah.
So you can't... Like, the Punisher isn't a good dude. You know, like, he's not a good character. He's killing
just better than the people he's killing.
Right.
But so, barely.
I do like there was somebody posted a meme where like the line that Batman always says is, if I kill one killer, there's still a killer here. And the Punisher's just like, that's why I kill a bunch of them.
Right.
Because then there's just me. Yeah.
Don't you know how math works? You're a millionaire. Yeah.
But so you get into the territory. So when they get to this house, they do the recon. They find out that Oscar Isaac's been leading them on, but they all agree to do the heist. They go in. They take out the security guards. They don't really take them out. They want a little casualties. They tie one guy up. They shoot one guy in the leg. But they're going into the house. And at first they think that the bad guy, you know, absconded with all the money.
What they think is that Oscar Isaac's informant flipped on
right,
Oscar
and they,
Isaac.
They left. And they,
yeah, she told them what was going on, and they all booked.
So they start...
Already, this is so confusing.
Yeah, right,
so
exactly.
So they take down...
That's the problem.
So they start... They realize it smells like fresh paint, so they realize that the money's hidden in the walls.
And why would that make you realize that? I've painted my house a lot of times, and I've never hid money in
because,
the walls.
Because the what they say earlier in the movie is that she is saying... Like, this informant... is saying that the house is the, like, there's no safe in the house. The house is the safe. So when they realize they smell paint, that's when they're just like, oh, the house is the safe.
So
they start smashing out walls.
So if they had showed up a month later, it wouldn't have smelled like paint anymore.
Correct.
And they would have never figured it out.
Also,
like,
this great timing.
Dumb.
It's great timing on their part.
Dumb.
Oh boy. So they start.
That's why when we get to the house, that's where I was like, I'm done.
Especially because there's so much money in the house. So the money was just like sitting in his living room. And then they were like, we should tear down the walls and put it in the walls.
I think the house has been adding money, and they just saw a transport of new money, and then by the next day it was added to the wall. They're adding it as they go along. The house is always, and that's why there's so much of it, because it has been building up. So the thing that really frustrated me is that Affleck's character just gets greedier and greedier and wants more and more. He sets up this plan as they start getting worried. He's like, oh, I built an extra time, and he just wants more and more of this money. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at my own clock, and I'm like, okay, so you basically need to be out there in 2 minutes. They've got a whole bunch of money in the walls in front of them. They have not bagged, and they're opening new walls.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, empty the walls you have, and if you have time, get to the others.
I would also like to point out that I don't think there's any way in hell that the struts on that van could have held all that money.
Nope.
Yeah,
nope.
Paper is heavy.
If the helicopter couldn't hold it, the van wasn't going to
hold
it.
That was a big boy helicopter.
Right.
That was a... I forget what they call it in Grand Theft Auto, those cargo helicopters that you need to pick up cars and stuff. That's about my only experience with the military helicopters, would be GTA 5 and Cargo Bob.
Yeah.
Cargo Bob.
Yeah, but if the cargo airplane
is saying
like, nope, I can't carry all of it.
Well,
they
can't carry it at a certain height.
Right.
But
you have to multiply, do the math, and higher you go.
No, I don't. My parents own printing companies, so I've delivered lots of paper.
Reams.
Have you picked up one case of paper with 10 reams in it?
I have. My parents owned printing companies.
Seriously, one case of paper is heavy.
Yeah, and so, I mean... And I put stuff in the back of the minivan, just in the back portion, not the seats down, just the back, that was so heavy that, like, if I hit a bump, I was scraping the tires.
Yeah.
And so there is no way that van can move
it was loaded.
That amount of money.
They had it floor to ceiling. Like,
yeah, there's no way.
Yeah.
Also loved how, like, they were all like effing Rain Man. Like, you would just show them a pile of money and they'd be like, oh, it's $35 million. Like, what? Where did you develop this skill? Where do people show you large piles of money?
You just guess.
And then you guess, and then they run it through a counter and
when
tell
they,
you if
when
you're
they
right
go
or
to
or
like the state fair and they see the jar full of jelly beans.
Right.
Yeah. Those are so good.
At least it was all in U.S. dollars. They didn't have to calculate anything else.
It wasn't,
currency.
Though.
Well, a lot of it was.
No.
What?
If you look at the scene where he's tearing down the walls, it's not U.S. dollars.
Well, there were a lot. I mean, they burned U.S. I mean, there was a lot of U.S.
Well, who do you think is funding them, Kevin?
I just want to chime in for a second and just say for the record that I love this banter so much.
This is what we do on this show, Matt.
No, it's funny because, like, that's the approach that my show tends to take sometimes.
Yeah.
But other times when a movie is just bad,
yeah.
I want you all to know this is the first time I think I've ever been on the show with you guys. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
My memory's a little foggy at times. But I just want to say that this has been an awesome experience.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Glad we have fun on this show. I mean, it's all about just stuff, kind of freestyle fun. But anyway, so yeah, so they get into it with, you know, the time's running out. They've got to go.
But here's the thing is, so then they start killing people.
Right.
Which I was like, okay, this is the movie. Also, as a Metallica fan, it's just, so they open with,
the music was way too on the nose.
So,
Yeah, like, I mean, it was
CCR,
like...
CCR?
Like,
Run Through the Jungle?
Well, first off, CCR always ends up on soundtracks because it's cheap.
It is, yeah.
The guy
right.
that owns the rights to it is a dick, and he'll sell it to you for a dollar.
But still, when they're going...
from John Fogerty.
But when they're going through the jungle, and it's okay.
But it's like, seeing the music cues in this movie,
yeah.
I would like to issue a personal retraction to everything I said about Captain Marvel last week and their music cues, because this was way worse.
I thought the opening Master of Puppets... I was fine.
It's because you love Metallica.
No, now that was too on the nose too, because it's the point about, you know, see him die on the hill in the early
days.
Wicked wounds test
but
their pride.
I liked that.
It's got that great drum fill there.
It
though.
Does. I know. But the last, when they get to, I think it was Pulling Teeth, whatever they did at the end, where I was just like,
and they played "All I Want for Christmas Is My Two Front Teeth."
It was so stupid.
Way too much.
Yeah, so stupid.
So anyway, you know, his informant, meanwhile, Oscar Isaacs promises her $2 million. He's going to get her and her brother out of jail.
Hey, is that going to come back later?
It will.
Yeah.
And they're trying to pin this whole thing on a gang. So they're like setting it up so they can get with the money. It looks like a rival gang. Everyone gets away scot-free.
Because they burn the house down.
Yeah. Spoilers. Yeah. Does not happen that way. So they subdue the guards. They get the money. Affleck's being a jerk. Like we said, he wants more and more money, where they're like, we already have tons of money and we got to go. We can't even put any more in the van.
Mine.
So
No.
He's the Affleck Daffy Duck.
He is the Affleck.
So now they've wasted so much time that the second shift of guards is showing up, right. So they have to kill them. Like Joe said, the family is supposed to be away at church. They're on their way back from church. Like, Affleck's screwing this whole thing up when they could have gotten away with half the money, all lived, had it all, and, you know, and I mean, I guess that's what they're trying to say here with greed. And
that's, they try, like Matt said, they're trying to do this morally,
yeah,
like ambiguous, or, I know, not I, even ambiguous, but like, yeah,
sophisticated, morally
they're
sound.
They're trying to make a statement.
Action movie.
It's just not interesting.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. Like, it loses to me, it loses everything as soon as we leave the house.
Yeah.
Like, there is a little bit of, I guess, a tie-in. There, I don't know. They want it to feel somewhat important to give the story a little bit more gravitas and
right.
to give meaning to everything it is that they're doing. But yeah, this is just not the kind of story that I was necessarily interested in seeing to begin with. I was hoping that this would be almost more like The Expendables and that it would be a campy romp of an action film.
So I was hoping that they would get stuck in the house
the whole time and have to, like, fend off.
That's what I was hoping we were going to get.
I like that. Yeah.
It was going to be kind of like Black Hawk Down.
Yeah, when they pulled up, when the second set of guards pulled up and they're screwed, and they're like, well, we need to escape out the back or leave the money, and Affleck's like, we're not leaving this money. I'm like, oh, they're going to be holed up in this house.
That's exactly
and it's
going
to be
a
crazy firefight. And yeah,
Lone Survivor.
Exactly. When they killed the drug lord, and I was just like, what?
So the drug lord,
right,
they go up to the bedroom, you know, they're checking the house, they really don't feel good about that drug lord, nowhere to be found. So he's in his safe room, which it's like, why did he come out of his safe room?
What are you doing?
It's so stupid. But
you came out with your...
You hear all this gunfire.
Yeah, and you've got one semi-automatic handgun.
Yeah.
These guys are running around with AR-15s.
You hear all... Yeah, he opens it and he's like, oh, you're...
Yeah, if you're in a safe room, by virtue of definition... Everything else is an unsafe room.
It was hidden.
I don't know if it's a translation thing.
It was like a hidden door.
Like,
too. Right.
You hide there so no one can find you. That is the definition of a safe room. This idiot comes out. You know, they instantly shoot him, but he ends up getting Charlie Hunnam through the side. But it's a clean.
Which is never a thing.
No,
it never becomes a thing. Like, he's running around with two bullet wounds.
Yeah,
and
but
he's
the other
totally
one just
okay.
Grazed his shoulder.
Yeah, right. But he's totally two bullet wounds because it was an exit wound. So he's got one in the front and one in the back.
Doesn't later he gets
his
shot.
Brother does.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're interchangeable.
Well, which
I'm glad they didn't. Did they put them next to each other in the poster?
Yeah, also it was like, you put Garrett Hedlund and
Charlie
Hunnam in the same movie and their brother. Like, I get it, but...
It's like Toby Maguire and...
Brothers.
And, yeah.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal. Yep. So anyway, they end up, they shoot him, they take out all the guards. I mean, you know, they're, again, some good action movie. There's just not enough of them, but there are some good action scenes. They're taking people out. I like the tactical handheld kind of look that this guy does. But anyway, they get all the money. They get it to a helicopter in the runway. It's $250 million. They ended up with a ton of money.
Right.
Pedro Pascal says, this is too much. I can't do it over the mountains. And then Affleck, again, works his anti-charm and is like, we want all this money.
Yeah.
He's like, okay.
No, it'll work because I want it to.
Yeah, like, it was,
I'm like, well, I'll give it a shot.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
This guy like, who are you, my last boss? Like,
this guy is the expert. You bring on Pedro Pascal because he can fly the helicopter. He knows how to do it. He knows how high it can go. He says, you cannot do this. We need to escape over the mountains. And Affleck's like, yeah, with this money.
How did they think that was all going to fit on a boat?
Yeah, and then
when they show up with this John boat, and
like,
I'm just like,
it's
that's
like a pontoon boat.
That's not going to work. I'm like,
you guys know nothing about physics.
I thought there was going to be some kind of like a tanker or, you know, like a small, I don't know what you'd call it, a fishing vessel or whatever.
He pulled the scene where Garrett Hedlund swims to the fishing boat, and I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? And then we see him later in a John boat.
Yeah,
and I was like, well, now wait a minute.
Maybe they were getting to the bigger, maybe, you know, fast.
How were they going to get the money there?
500 trips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Their plan.
Like, everything about how to. I'm like, these guys are supposed to be the. Best and the Brightest, yeah. Tactical.
Well, like, talk about that. How about when they leave the house and they're like, oh, the family's back from church, and they drive by them slowly and roll their windows down,
yeah.
Showing that they're Americans.
Sure.
Like, do you not think that
these
people have...
Do you remember the whole,
have,
like, gang plan
and
we were talking about?
The gang plan, so now they know who it was, and they have armed guards in that car. The family wasn't driving themselves, so they roll down the window and they're like, hey, guys, like...
And the son's just like, oh, man, that guy killed
my
dad.
That never comes around where you think, like, the son, it's going to, oh, is that Triple Frontier 2?
Yeah, right, right.
Quadruple
yeah.
Frontier?
Quadruple Frontier. They wish.
So, anyway.
Sextuple. Because if it's times two,
well, that's what, yeah.
The triple so would become six, the three and the six.
This movie's not smart enough.
Carry the one.
Oh, we're well aware that it's not
but
smart
if we were
enough.
In Germany, you would make my bone.
Exactly. Road yeah. Forks you.
So, guys, they get to the top of the mountain that they have to cross over with this $250 million. What happens?
The helicopter blows up.
Oh, they can't do it, right? Just kind of like they said in the scene earlier. With the guy that knows what he's doing.
Right.
So they end up doing this crazy crash landing onto a cocaine farm. And this is, again, where I want to talk about the morals and questioning. Again, yeah, they're stealing money from the bad guys, and now they're on a farm. And yes, they're farming for cocaine, but this is their way of life. They're a family.
Yeah,
they
these
own
are
this
like
farm.
The villagers these aren't. These aren't drug dealers. These are just local
farmers.
People that don't. That this is the cash crop.
Yeah,
right.
And you know that and the drug dealer probably like owns that. Like they're right. He's making them farm this. They're working for him still.
Yeah.
So now you've got these guys crashing, and they're trying to get this money. They're in here murdering in their country, and then they're killing people on their land. So you start to question where is the morality?
It's interesting
here?
Because you know what this country needs. A wall.
No,
they need
Jesus.
A wall to keep Americans out.
Oh, okay.
Coming in and doing this.
No,
to
that
them.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that's going to keep them safe.
Yeah.
So they do this
but
crazy.
They do a weird. This is the flip with Affleck. Like yeah. the his character already starts to take a little bit of a turn in the house where mm-hmm. he gets super greedy. This is where he goes full military and yeah. like doesn't care who the casualties are. He literally starts just picking off.
Well, it's. I mean. They were on
village.
Their land, but
yeah.
the guys, one guy has a gun, the other guy pulls a knife and is getting, you know, kind of crazy. And at this point, it's them or us or them kind
right.
of mentality. So I understand why he did it, but still, he's getting a little crazy here, and the greed is taking over. And so he kills all these guys. You know, Oscar Isaac, most all of them are not happy with this. They pay off the village elder. They, you know, $200,000 for the mules to carry the bags, and then a couple million for each family or
well,
something.
Well, they had
like
to
that.
They ditched a lot of the money,
yeah.
first of all, which it was just, I mean,
well, they didn't ditch it at first. They the
when
nets on the
Pedro Pascal says, get some of that off of the plane.
Yeah,
so they throw
well, they
some
threw
of
a
it,
few off yeah. in the mountains. Yeah,
and I don't know how dumping like four duffel bags is going to.
I feel
enough.
Like
it's in my notes. I'm like, okay, I know money's heavy, but in a huge plane like that, yeah, the four duffel bags,
you got to kick off that whole load.
They're like, we should kick off this person, but leave.
They should have doubled down on the crazy, and Affleck should have started throwing people off of that thing.
I seriously wondered if it was going to come to that though, especially with the informant and her brother, because
well,
they
weren't on the plane.
Well,
they were gone.
It would have made for some more compelling drama, honestly.
Yeah,
yeah,
but that's a great, again, that's a great choice, a questionable choice that character could have made in some situation of, you know, it's either going to be all of us.
Plus,
or
if he's that money hungry, not, it solves two problems. It lightens the load of the plane and it increases your share.
That would have made, for if you made Affleck the bad guy and he's doing all this out of greed and he's compromising his friends and now they have to deal with that, that could have been really compelling.
Could have been.
So,
but it wasn't.
So they leave, and then the best thing that I like to do when I'm in a foreign country stealing money from drug lords and fighting people with AKs and such, I like to wear a bright orange jacket.
Man,
I don't know if you guys like
when he's in the mountain. So like all of them are basically wearing like dark grays and you know darker colors.
Why
There's
is he
Affleck
in a bright orange jacket?
Rocking like he's out hunting in the woods, so another hunter doesn't shoot him.
Did I miss something, Matt? Did that strike you as odd?
Is that even a question?
I just that blew my mind. And they didn't show him put it on. They leave the town with the donkeys. They show the foreshadowing son, which, I mean, clearly that was going to come back. But standing in the road, you killed my father kind of thing.
Right.
But then they leave. They walk out the path, cut to them in the jungle with a bright orange jacket.
I thought it was really over the top when the son referred to himself as Inigo Montoya.
Right.
Like, that's a little on the nose.
It was.
And so, yeah. So
he just started going all Pedro Pascal on him.
Right.
You killed my sister.
Right. That's perfect. You had what's Martell? Oberyn Martell.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, Game of Thrones, Matt. Game of Thrones. It's
I can't wait.
Here.
I'm counting the days.
April's
going
to be a busy month.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Yeah, you've got WrestleMania, Avengers, Game of Thrones.
Like yeah.
Avengers and the Battle of Winterfell for Game of Thrones all take place on the same weekend.
It's crazy.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's, I stopped. It's going to set a record for how many fictional characters die in a single weekend, I feel like.
I gave up on Game of Thrones. Did it ever get to be winter?
No. It's still coming.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow. It's coming. Don't worry.
Yeah, winters must be thinking about baseball a lot.
BR
it should have came by
day.
Now. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
So they crash. They start well, making.
They're
their
on
way.
The donkeys, and they got to go up the mountain. They
right,
to get to the ocean.
Way up the Andes.
There's the huge mountains in between them. So they get.
I like the donkey scene.
Yeah, they're donkeys. They're on the tight wall there. One of them falls. One of them's concerned with the donkey. The other one's concerned with it could have been one of us. And they fight, and they start fighting. And it's like these. And to their credit, the character's like, dude, you're going to get us all killed. Like, we're on this ledge, and you're fighting over this donkey.
Stupid donkey.
So they get up to the hill. They're raising the money up to the top of the hill. The whole time, I'm questioning, which I guess they are too, how the hell are they going to get this money on foot, no animals,
back down the mountain?
Like, this plan's never going to work. In my head, I'm thinking, there's just no way. But they start raising the money up, let the donkeys go. They get to the top of the hill, and it's cold. It's night.
Well, they... Affleck and Oscar Isaac kind of have they don't really have it out, but he just kind of says, look, I said some things. Oscar Isaac says, I said some things I shouldn't have said. Affleck's like, nope, I was in the wrong too. We both kind of mucked this up. We're good to go. But then, they're sitting down, they're having, they're cold, and they kind of say, we got to stay dark. If we light a fire, it's going to give away our location. And I was like, it's the most normal thing you guys have said the entire time.
But how frustrating was that when you know that whoever, these drug lords, the villagers, they're going to be tracked. You know it.
And yeah.
To give away their position like
that. And
then
when he lights the thing on fire and it's just
money.
Let's laugh about it.
The most expensive campfire ever. Huh? It's like, come on.
And then, so they wake
up. What happens the next morning?
Next morning.
Inigo Montoya.
Yeah, shows back up and he's.
I mean, this was very Lone Survivor-ish. Again, I like the idea, the standoff, them, flanking and going, doing all the tactical maneuvers. But Affleck gets to the top of the hill. He shoots the guy that was shooting at all of them, the guy that grazed
Garrett
Hudlin's shoulder. He takes him out, but then we immediately...
It was all a setup.
We immediately go to the top of the rock. It's the guy in the yellow shirt who was the you killed my father guy.
You killed my father.
And just shoots Affleck straight
in the face.
The head.
Yeah. And I was just like, well... They've mentioned his kids enough. The last thing I needed was for him to tell me that he was going to retire in 6 months. That was the last thing that we could have had said.
They're really cracking down on that paying for college thing.
Yeah.
They're not
kidding.
Messing around anymore. They heard about it and they're like,
So. Lori Loughlin's like, hey, I hear there's a spot available. Not for you.
So anyway, I think this is a really good performance from Hedlund again.
Yeah,
I mean, he's
this
doing
is the scene
thing
I was talking about where he freaks out. And
Affleck's there with half a face. I mean, his head's all over the rock.
I do like,
and
I do like where
him
Charlie
up.
Hunnam was like, let me take a look at it. And it's like, he's.
Yep.
The back of his head's gone, right? Yeah. There's nothing left. So they now not only do they have to carry the money, they have to carry Affleck as well. And judging by how big he was in BVS and Justice League, he's a big boy.
He's a big guy.
Yeah,
and now he's dead weight.
Now he's dead weight.
Oh, touche.
Yeah, I see what he did there. So now this movie gets away from being an action movie. It's at this point where it's just like, what do we do with this money? Are we really... here, what are we doing here?
Well, there's less and less. They're losing men. They lose Affleck. They have all these bags that they know they can't carry.
Right.
So at this point, I mean, they keep trying to get out, and Oscar Isaac's digging in more and more. Now, even more so than ever, Affleck wasn't going to leave without the money. He dies. Now, if we leave without the money, he dies for nothing, and we don't get money. So he's just all.
And he is kind of a prick where he brings up the Affleck's family.
Yeah,
He kind of uses that as motivation to get the money and Affleck back.
I mean, I get what he's doing. I mean, he really is I get it from that perspective because if he dies and now they don't give money to the family, they're...
If there's any character who would have appreciated leaving his rotting carcass behind and screwing his family out of money, it's Affleck's character.
But did you guys totally feel... I mean, listen, I really was not so on board with this movie as I wanted to be. But when Affleck gets taken out of the story, did you all just feel like at that point it's like, I don't even know why I'm watching anymore?
Yes.
It was an odd choice to make his character be the one to die, because he is kind of... I mean, even though Oscar Isaac is positioned...
He's the top guy.
You're really following him and his plan, but Affleck is the one that kind of is, and you feel like he's really in charge.
Yeah.
He's the headstrong
one. I mean, he's the one that approved the plan. Mm-hmm. He was the leader. They call him captain. So I assume that he was the leader of their troop or whatever.
Yeah, he's calling the shots.
I was glad when they finally gave him a gun because before that, like, Affleck was delivering all his dialogue with his arms crossed.
Oh.
Yeah, he was just standing there with his arms crossed whenever he talked. And so when he gave him a gun, he finally had a different thing to
do.
Well, hey, here's something to do with your hands now that we can't smoke in movies anymore.
Well, it's because he was actually method acting for Batman, so he didn't want to see like the bat suit under his protruding his shirt.
I think it's because he was no longer in Batman shape. He was trying to hide his boobs.
That's also, yeah. You could tell that he has definitely slimmed down from, I mean, because he was ripped to the gills. And,
yeah.
And also, I feel like in Justice League, they were just like, can we just put more muscles in this thing? Because I don't want to get that big again.
Well, if you thought Affleck was looking a little heavy, let me just cross my arms here for the rest of this podcast.
But yeah, so then, Matt, I agree. I feel like when they took Affleck out of this movie, it took the air out, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know if...
Which I think says a lot about Affleck. He gets a bad rap as an actor.
And he should sometimes.
But it also shows you that the dude's a movie star.
He can sell a movie.
Oh, without question.
And
without question.
When he leaves, it the loss is felt, not because you cared about the character, but because there's just he's got that
intangible thing.
Yeah,
he's a movie star,
right.
Like you said.
I don't know if I buy into that still.
Really?
I feel like Hollywood has been trying to make Ben Affleck into a movie star for years, and it never seemed to click. And then he becomes a director, and that starts to click. And the only reason why I feel like the movie star thing started back up again for him was because he was directing himself in The Town and Argo.
Right.
You know?
That's probably
and
true.
And those movies were really well received. So everyone now thinks, oh, Ben Affleck is on the rise again. And he all of a sudden he's considered a great actor. And then he gets the Batman role. And
which should have
worked.
It should have worked.
It should have worked.
That should have been
the script was the problem with those.
Yeah.
But I just feel like Hollywood still has this idea of Ben Affleck as the actor, the star who can sell the movie, and I just really don't believe that has ever truly existed.
I don't think he's a great actor, but I do think he's a movie star. He's got some sort of charisma and appeal that you can't quite put a finger on.
He knows how to work a room.
And that it does it comes through when he's on screen, especially when he's playing with, I think it really, you can see it when he's with these other guys that are also, you know, for the most part, name actors that people know and have followings from other things, and he still is he still draws your eye in a way that the other ones just
that
don't.
That is true. When you get that scene between Oscar Isaac and Affleck, I was paying more attention to Affleck. And that's not I think Oscar Isaac is
a great actor, and he has that appeal too. But you're right, there's still something about Affleck.
And maybe it's his stature. I mean, he's a big dude.
True.
And Oscar Isaac, I mean, I don't know if it's just the way he was standing, but Affleck looked like he was towering over him. So yeah, maybe that was just what I was thinking at that. You know, when you lose him, there's something that you lose in the movie in general.
So now they got to get to the boat. Is it Hedlund goes and scouts forward, or someone scouts forward?
Garrett Hedlund
goes. Okay, scouts forward. He finds out that now they have a child army out there that are hunting them down. There's 20 kids with guns looking for them. Everyone says, let's leave the money and just get out of here. But again, like we said, Oscar Isaac is like, nope, for all those reasons. We got to go with the money, got to do it for the family, blah, blah, blah. They end up finding a kid that pulls up in a truck. They don't want to kill anyone anymore. Oscar Isaac's like, no deaths.
I do like where even Pedro Pascal's like, shoot him.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
And so he's like, no more killing. So they shoot. They like they get the kids out, send them away.
Yeah.
They're in the car. They're shoot. Other trucks come. All these kids come to hunt them down. They're just shooting out their tires, you know, making their cars flip out.
I got to tell you, I liked this scene.
This
is a good scene.
Racing through the.
When they're doing interesting stuff again with this cinematography and this director, like these action sequences are good. They're just in a lesser movie.
You know what my favorite shot of the whole movie was?
What's that?
When you first go to whatever country. Did they ever tell us what country this really is? Okay, I didn't think so, which I get.
Nondescript South America.
Yeah, but when they first go to South America, Stan, and that shot of the elevated highway that goes through the jungle.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was awesome.
Like, I just like linger on this for another 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I was loving that.
I'm telling you, like before I watched this movie, I looked up, you know, director, cinematographer. I knew the director, but I looked at that and I'm like, this guy has made some good looking movies.
He's why those David Ayer movies are good.
Yeah.
Like if he is the reason that if he did Fury and he did End of Watch, like
those shots
End of Watch is, if you've never seen it,
oh,
I cannot.
It's so good.
It's as you know, it is what it is for me.
Yeah.
But
Joe's a police officer, Matt.
Yeah. So
hide your weed.
Yeah. Or that's don't. Fair. Okay. Or don't. It's yeah. fine.
Wait, what state are you in?
Oh, in New York.
Oh, you're fine.
Yeah, don't worry about it. But like the realism that both of those movies had is transferred here. When he gets to do those ground level action sequences.
Military tactical shots look good.
Yeah.
They look good.
Yeah.
So he's shooting out tires. He's trying to stop all these kids without killing them because he knows they're just kids and this is their way of life. And like they don't really want to kill them or cause any more issues like that. So they're shooting them out. They're getting to the water. Finally, Hedlund shows up. They all kind of just blurred together for me. But
James Hook.
So James Hook shows up in his little pontoon boat.
Yeah. And they're on the beach there, you know, they're
at this part they've dropped all the money.
They have
except for
enough. They have enough, like enough that they can carry.
Bags on them.
Yes.
But yeah, they've hidden them all in a certain location, which is gonna come around later. But so they jump over a little cliff or whatever. They drive kind of right into the water. They're shooting at people taking cover as they get onto the boat. And then they get away. I mean, that's pretty much
how it ends. And then the next scene opens up in like a boardroom.
At a bank or something?
Yeah, no,
whoever's going to control the money.
Yeah,
yeah, they're at the dummy corporation that they set up in St. John
to make payments and all
that. Yeah.
So they all figured out that they're going to get $1 million each.
Yeah, $5 million split between five ways.
Well, they also get a cut. I think it was more than that because like the bank gets a cut. Because I think they were the ones that hired.
It ended up being just a little over $1 million.
Yeah, it came out to $5 million, and so it was gonna be five ways, four of them, and then $1 million to the trust for Tom Ben Affleck's character's family.
You'd think that with all that Wayne money, those kids would be fine.
So one by one, they all start. You know, they all just feel terrible about this mission. Everyone but Oscar Isaacs, and they all start one by one ripping up their contracts, give it to the trust, give it to the trust.
Yeah.
And at the very end, I don't get it.
They've already got $1 million. They're kids, so they can leave it sit there and earn compound interest for 20 years.
Like, do they need more?
Well, I mean, I get the three people. Like, so I get Garrett Hedlund, Charlie Hunnam, and Pedro Pascal. Like, I can understand where they're like, look, man.
But Isaac signs the paper. That's what was questionable to me because she goes, you know, I should set up all the distributions. And he says, yes, of course. But he signs the paper. He doesn't tear his up. So I took it as that he took the money.
No, because it looked like there were multiple signatures already on the paper.
Oh, that's so that was a different.
But,
yeah. Okay.
But then you also have to ask yourself, why was there already a contract drawn up for you to give your money to somebody else?
Right.
Well, I thought that was to turn the money over to the trust.
And why would that paperwork already be there?
I don't know. That's a good point.
Like, because it makes
these lawyers are
because
good,
it works because it makes the scene faster and more dramatic.
Right,
but it makes
right.
no logical sense. Matt, what did you think about like had you just given up at this point or like?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, here's the problem too. I also have a hard time watching films at home lately because I'm so entrenched in my phone.
Yeah,
so I'm very easily distracted.
Same.
So the minute the movie loses me, it has to work very hard to get me back.
Yeah. Totally.
And this film just completely lost me.
I was checking in and out. Like, we get to those action sequences, and I'd check in. We'd get to some bull, you know, I'm a sensitive man kind of thing, and I'd check out. And then we get to I'm the same way. Like, it is hard to sit down on my couch and be focused in on the movie.
Let's talk about the final shot of this movie.
Right.
Where the, you know, guy one meets guy two
Charlie,
in the street.
Charlie Hunnam and Oscar Isaac kind of embrace. They give a handshake.
Should I have known what that was about?
What?
When he hands him the...
It's the coordinates of the money they dropped. Hopefully you can make good use of this at some point.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was like the next mission.
No. It's where they dropped the money.
That's where all that $200 million is
Laid.
Because it was going to all be covered by snow, and so no one would find it in this remote area, so they could always go back and get it.
And then he says, I hear... Because he sent the informant and her brother to Australia.
Right. So he was going to go.
Sydney sounds pretty good this time of year.
I've got a chick that digs me that's got $2
million. Yeah, she's actually got money.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
I did like that. She made out better than any of us.
Right. And then he walks off to another, like, I will give them credit. It's a deep cut Metallica song. Like, it's not one that you normally hear in a movie.
Right.
And that's kind of how it closes out. And it was like, when they use the chain.
Yeah.
In this, and I was like, well, I saw this in Guardians.
Well,
it was done better.
I just watched Guardians.
Oh, no, they used Tusk and Tusk.
They used Tusk and Tusk, yeah.
I had just watched Guardians a couple days ago.
That's what I said. Like, just to touch on that, that is such, it's a song that I've known my entire life, mm-hmm. and I would have never in a million years thought to set it to an action scene.
Yeah.
But it fits perfectly into Guardians.
Yeah.
And this one, I was like, oh,
and
I like this song, but...
And Matt's got my back. Matt loves Guardians too, just like I do.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I was having this big debate, and I know Matt was a part of it and saw it online. And not so much of a debate, but just a love letter to it, because I love... We talked about how excited we are. James Gunn is back. He should definitely be the one to finish this trilogy and all that. But just going back and watching 2, and a lot of people I was talking to were like, yeah, it's inferior to the first, or even on an extreme level, a lot of people were like, yeah, I hate Guardians 2. It's in the bottom of the MCU for me. And so I'm like, am I crazy here? Because I love this movie. And I post that, and I get hundreds of people commenting, responding, some people saying I love it, it's the best movie in the MCU, and I'm glad I'm not alone, because it is a beautiful movie.
I think if you ask, you know, 20 people on the street what their favorite MCU movie is, you're gonna get 20 answers.
Absolutely. I just was glad that I wasn't alone though and thinking it was great, because
I don't know that you get 20 different answers, because nobody's gonna say Thor 2.
Yeah.
You get 19.
You never know. Yeah.
So that's the movie. I mean, for a one-time watch, I would never watch this movie again.
I'll never
but
watch it again.
I was entertained enough by it, but not enough to recommend it or even try to watch it again. But
no.
There were some things like the camera work, the action scenes, I did enjoy. But as far as the character development and the likability, it's...
Yeah, it's a low to midland. So one more thing I might have missed.
Yeah.
Why is it called Triple Frontier? Did I totally?
Oh, are we supposed to know that?
Okay. I just thought, like, did I totally miss it?
Matt,
like,
any ideas?
Man.
That's okay. None of us know.
It's okay to not know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not quizzing you.
Yeah. We don't have the
answer for this, but yeah. At the same time.
Let me just be clear. We don't have the answer, so yeah, we're asking you so we can trap you and be like, you're dumb. Like, like, we don't know it either.
I don't think anybody knew.
Is a cool sounding name?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Well, space is the final frontier. You know, there are other frontiers. So I guess.
So I just did it. I actually just did a quick Google search.
Yeah.
And Tres Fronteras is, you know, three frontiers. It is the Spanish name for an area in the Amazon rainforest in the upper Amazon region of South America.
Well, there
so
we
basically,
go.
They're there.
It's really called. Three Frontiers, so they renamed it to Triple Frontier, and that's basically where the story takes place. There you go.
Oh, well, thanks. Wow. See, man? That's why we brought
this. This is why we bring on the pros.
That was good stuff.
So,
there it is. That's Triple Frontier.
Yeah, I guess that's it for Triple Frontier.
It's for the best.
Yeah, it is. So, God, I hope they don't go look for that money.
They won't. If they do, it'll be like that Backdraft 2 sequel. Did you see that?
I'm the one that shared it on her page.
Perfect,
it was like, Backdraft 2? Who asked for
aren't you guys excited for Quadruple Frontier?
Yeah, we are. Septuple, octuple. Now,
I'm like, how about you take that money and spend it on season 4 One Day at a Time?
Yeah, there it is.
There you go.
So,
I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And Matt, where can people find you and your podcast?
People can find me on all the social media networks at Next Best Picture. And my podcast is called the Next Best Picture Podcast. You can find that on all of the podcasting networks as well. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
I hope you had fun with this silly movie.
Oh, it was fun.
Good.
And also, don't forget, you can find the show online at realspoilers.com or on Twitter at realspoilers or on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers. Find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, don't forget our Patreon account at patreon.com/realspoilers. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Dobbs is ambushed by Gold Hat.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.